So what I want to focus on today, it just recently, I just had a lot of different discussions with members, non-members, and what am I trying to say? It's just been very interesting because, well, obviously, I'm stuck like everybody else. Things that seem obvious to me are obviously not obvious to other people. Anybody ever had that experience? Unfortunately, it's not that uncommon in many areas of life. And so a lot of the interesting things that I've had is talking with members, some of them longtime members, about issues that I consider kind of fundamental to Dharma, or fundamental to the way I've been teaching, And yet in talking to people, it's very clear that they are missing something. I mean, that's my own two cents. And so I think, well, why is that? And I think there's lots of reasons that I want to talk about. But what I came to was something, and you probably, for those who've been around, heard me talk about before. It's something like very basic, like in traditional Buddhism, it's sort of like before you even begin to practice or anything. There is this analogy of the three bowls, which is really, usually this is the first thing you get when you enter a traditional path in Dharma, which is sort of like how to be a good student. we all enter the Dharma as students. And in a certain way, we might say Buddhism not being a theology, not being a belief system. It's really, in a certain way, a very interesting kind of educational system, where we're basically just being re-educated in how to lead, a good life, an awakened life, how to train our minds. So it's very much an educational model. So in that sense, we are the students. And so there are teachings saying, well, what's right from the beginning, what's a good student, right? We all want to be good students, right? Because especially in when we're walking on a spiritual path, because we're entering this path, because we're seeking a certain degree of healing, we're seeking a certain degree of transformation or a significant kind of transformation in the way we are in the world, and the way our mind is, and the way our hearts are, right? So I mean, there is something that we want to change in our life, and so we are coming to a spiritual path. I mean, in this case, for me, it's Buddhism Dharma, but I'm willing to give it a broad kind of a spiritual path, transformative path. So traditionally, the teachings, the mind of the student is a bowl, okay? So ideally, the Dharma, the teachings, the practices, sort of this is like a pure milk, a pure nectar, right? Pure, pure, pure. And ideally, the bowl that we pour the milk or the nectar in is clean. I mean, it's kind of simple, right? Free of defects. Because then it's very easy to drink. But so the teaching says, well, in terms of the student's bowls, there are three defects that the student, meaning us, we need to be careful of right in the beginning, right? And so in talking to a number of people over time too, but just kind of hit me this week, I realized one of the problems with this is this was a very traditional model. People had lots of time. Their minds, I think, were much simpler and purer. It was a different, their encounter with the Dharma was very differently. So they had time to really reflect on this. And what I realize is for many of us, it's sort of like drive-through. you know, we're in a hurry, right? So we're, you know, I'll just drive through and pick something up, right? Because I'm on my way somewhere else, you see. And I think many of us are encountered with Dharma because of this, you know, we all know about it, you know, the nature of our busy lives and you know, electronic devices. And, you know, I don't need to go into the whole thing. You know, there's just so much going on that our encounter with Dharma is sort of like that. You know, like we zoom in here on a Sunday morning and we we get a couple hours of meditation and Dharma, and then we zoom out again, you know, and get back into our, you know what I'm saying? And so so what I realized is this process with the bowls is ongoing. And I think that's the problem that we sort of, that many people sort of see this as a, like a beginning practice, and then they forget about it. But I realized, no, this is an ongoing practice. So let me talk about this. So everybody knows what the clean bowl, upright, pure milk, nectar, everything's good, right? Tastes good. So what's the first defect? The first defect is the student who has an upside down bowl. Okay, so you imagine you got this wonderful pure nectar, you pour it on the bowl, and it all goes into the ground. There's nothing to receive it. Okay, so what does this actually mean? Right? Because again, like anybody who reads these teachings, anybody listening to me or anywhere, you know, is here and listening because they want to receive something, right? I would think. Right, there's something they want to receive here today. So what is an upside down bowl again, which where nothing gets in? Well, I think one kind of mind is a mind that's not open. Right? So, you know, if we come to the Dharma and our minds are not open, we already made up our mind. We already have a kind of a rigid, you know, belief system and ideas about life and things, you know, that or how things should be. So it doesn't matter what we read or what we're told, it doesn't penetrate because we have a very rigid construct in our minds. We're very attached, or let's say, you know, well, I'm not like that. So I'm not like a rigid structure, not me, but we may be very attached to our views, a little subtler, you see, we're maybe very attached to our views. So when something comes our way, we just ignore it, you know what I mean? I think for many, especially Americans, when I talk about Americans, you know, in sort of current 20th century, 21st century Buddhism, they talk about, you know, kind of traditional Buddhists and convert Buddhists. So it was like, I would be a convert Buddhist. I wasn't brought up in a Buddhist family. So we're talking now about, I mean, the teaching's for everybody, but we're also talking about that many people come to Buddhism, come to Dharma, as opposed to growing up in it, right? So we have a lot of ideas. I mean, we've already have a lot of stuff, a lot of cultural stuff, and you know, stuff that in our minds already, you see. And so it's we don't even realize that our bowl, our mind can be sort of not ready to receive, right? And so much of it just goes pouring off. We're attached to our views. And this ties into another one. We're also, and this ties into our attachment to views, we also grow up, all of us, in an incredibly individualistic culture. Everybody know what I'm talking about? You see? Where, you know, the individual's needs, the individual's wants, the individual's ideas, the individual's aspirations are what is what? The way we're taught to live. I mean, it's good to be a kind person, not be too much, but basically we're individualistic. You know, we plot our own way in life, don't we? our own way in life, our own career, our own homes, our own families, our own, you know, what I'm going to do this weekend. You know what I'm saying? We live in a culture where the emphasis is on me. Right? Does everybody get it? I mean, I get it. Now, I had a very interesting experience because I spent several years traveling, you see, and spending time in different cultures, but also especially Buddhist cultures. And what struck me was, well, they don't see it that way. You know what I mean? It took me a time to realize there's something going on here. Now, that's traditionally, I mean, things are changing. But what I realized was in their cultures, the we comes first. It was very interesting. You know, people think about the whole, the family, the village, the community, the society. So a lot of the choices they make or they think about is how is this going to benefit everyone or how is this going to benefit the we? And I went, wow, that's a very different way of seeing things, right? Because you know, even though I was brought up, you know, good values, the whole deal, it really was, you know, chart your own course in life, make up your own mind. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, please understand. I'm just saying that's something that's very strong in us, you see. So it's very hard for us to just turn our bowl over and say, yeah, just pour it in. I'll drink it. I mean, you know, and I could go on lots of other reasons why that's hard for us, you know. But I think that's, yeah, a lot of it is we're just very self-consumed by our own stuff, our own dramas, our own stuff, you know. So again, it's hard for us to turn the bowl over and just receive. You know, there's a famous Zen anecdote. It's not the upside down bowl, it's the full bowl. You know, where this great Buddhist scholar comes to the Zen master because he wants to, you know, he's a scholar of Buddhism and he wants to engage the teacher in all kinds of dialogue, you know, and he wants to really show them that his ideas are right and all that. So the first thing the teacher does is, well, go, you know, and the guy tells him why he's here and wants to do dialogue with him and all that. And the Buddha says, well, why don't you have some tea first? So, you know, he takes out the teacups, got the little pot of tea, and he reaches over to pour some tea in the scholar's cup, and he pours the tea, he fills it to the brim, and then he keeps pouring. So it's sort of, you know, guy says, you know, scholar says, well, what's going on here? What are you doing this for? He said, you know, this cup, this full cup of tea is like your mind, you see. You pour tea into it, it doesn't go in, it just flows out. You know, and the same thing, he said, you know, your mind is so full of concepts and ideas, you know, you're not here to receive anything. So again, another way of looking at that is our mind is already kind of made up, you see. So even though we listen, we don't let anything get in. So that's an upside down bowl, okay? The next one, which again, I think is very pervasive, is the bowl, it's up right now, right? Okay, I'm ready to receive the teachings and the practices, okay? The bowl has holes in it. So in this case, you know, nectar's poured in, milk's poured in, and it slowly seeps out. We have to keep hearing it over and over. We forget and forget and forget. Right. Again, we all know, you know, distractibility is just epidemic, right, in our society. Right? I mean, everything is what? Shorter, shorter, shorter. Right? You know? Make your articles short. Make your videos no more than 2.5 minutes. You know what I mean? It's like short attention span, right? Every now and then I look at the New York Times. I was fascinated this week. Maybe this is common, but you know, they have an op-ed section. Under each of them, they said how long it takes to read it. Under each one of them. This one, 3 minutes. This one, 4 minutes. I mean, I thought that was fascinating. And again, maybe this goes on in other arenas, you know, but I said, wow. Before people even starting to read an article, they want to know how long it's going to take them to read it. Okay, so what does that tell you, right? So it is, when everything is sound bites, when everything is like that and people are just, you know, going from one to the other, to the other, to the other, it is very hard to remember, isn't it? You see what I'm saying? It's not like it's a significant fault, but I think it's a very pervasive part of our modern culture that we are so highly distractible that even when we, you know, encounter things that are significant, you know, and these days people can encounter lots of Dharma. They can read it, they can listen to podcasts, they can go online and download things. I mean, the amount of information we can gather is you know, endless. And yet, to have it really get in, right? So we really digest it. Food has to be digested before it can be used, right? By the body, right? If we just eat food and, you know, swallow it whole, you know, it'll come out whole. It won't be very, you know, used, you know, to give nourishment and energy to the body. So this bowl with a hole means it's always leaking out. It's always leaking out. And again, it's not, it's again, here our attention is intention is upright, you see. But we don't realize our bowl is leaking. So, you know, learning to not have a leaky bowl, learning to have a mind that can retain is one thing, you know. Again, you know, like I'm up here talking, right? This is called the Dharma talk. Now, I have no idea what's going on in your minds, you know. Are you listening with 100% of you? Like really totally present? Or are you listening and thinking about what I'm saying? Or, you know what I mean? Or thinking about what you're going to have for lunch? Or thinking about, well, this is kind of boring, or I've heard this before. You see what I'm saying? So it's just interesting. You know, do we really listen? Do we really pay attention? You know, and we know that deep listening is something we practice because people don't listen. Right? People are talking to us and we're already, you know, thinking about our reply to them or interpreting what they're saying or thinking about something else. Right? And again, that's, you know, it's very hard when you live that way to retain, and especially something that is of significance to you. If your own healing and transformation, if the changes you want to make in the actions of your body, speech, and mind are of significance to you, right? Like they're important to us, they're meaningful to us, you know? Perhaps even more important than the doing part of our life, which we're all very consumed by, the doing and achieving part of our life, but attending to the person, to the mind who's doing all that and how they are. You see, this is the purview of Dharma. This is the purview of spiritual teachings. And again, how much attention, or does it just all, leak away? And again, you know, if we're always learning on the run, right, I think it's very difficult for people to retain, because that time to reflect you know, just an inward kind of reflection, the time to reflect, what does this really mean to me? How do I understand this? Is this important? What would it be like if I actually began to live this way or brought this into my life? You know what I'm saying? That's a very personal conversation, but it takes time. It takes time. And I think, you know, we're moving in a culture where reflection, self-reflection, is going to become a lost art, you know? Because people don't have that kind of time where they reflect. As soon as they're not doing, they're you know what they're doing, right? You know, we fill up the space, and reflection takes time. So we have to be a lot careful. And then the last one, which is a very interesting one, which is, okay, the bowl is upright. No holes. I'm paying attention. Well, the third one is your bowl clean? Or is it a dirty bowl? Which is very interesting, right? So what is, because again, you know, most of us wash our dishes, right? We don't, right, just keep using the same bowl over and over again, do we? And kind of it, no, we clean it. So when we eat the next meal, you know, all we taste is that, the taste of that meal. It's not contaminated by old tastes or rotting things. So is my bowl clean or dirty? So the third defect is having an unclean bowl. So this means, okay, I'm open. Yeah, I'm not rigid. I'm here to learn. I'm open. I'm paying attention, right? And I'm letting the Dharma in. I'm letting these teachings in. I'm listening. But then it's something I think for us is something much subtler, which is that many of us have unconsciously many deep-seated ideas and orientations that we then mix with the Dharma. We mix with the teachings. So we hear it, but then we interpret it in our way and practice it in our way. So the question is, am I really, because that's what struck me in talking to a number of people was, are they really hearing what the teachings are saying? For example, so in Buddhism, there are certain truths. We don't like that word truth, right? But it's not like I have the truth, like a lot of people think they have a truth based on their belief system or their ideology or revelation. So in Buddhism, there are certain truths, but they're based on observation of reality. Okay, so let me give you an example. What's a truth of Buddhism? Impermanence. Okay, impermanence is a truth. Everything's impermanent, everything is changing. All the time. Okay. This is a fundamental truth that the Buddha talked about. It's observable. Right? If something's a truth, it's a truth for everyone, right? You can be a Buddhist, a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, an atheist, you see. But if something's true, it's true for everyone. Right? So, impermanence is a truth. Everything is impermanent. Nothing is stable. Everything is changing, right? And even though the observation, you know, was originally made by people who observed, beginning with the Buddha, who observed life or observed what was going on in life and the changes in life, observed their own mind and how that was always changing. But we know science continues to confirm you know, on subatomic levels, right? That things are just always in flux. Everything is changing, changing. Nothing's solid. And yet, this fundamental truth of Buddhism, many people still have not taken in. Because still, we go, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this happened, that happened, this changes, that changed. You know, I can't believe anything. What's going on in the world? You know? I can't believe these changes are happening. But everything is changing. A truth. So the truth is cause and effect. Everything is changing because of causes and conditions. Very scientific. Everything. Right? So if you want to know why things are changing, find the causes, all the variables, and you'll understand. So this is another truth. Right? Another truth of Dharma is, you know, a life orientated toward pleasure, achieving desire, is fundamentally a life that's going to be unsatisfactory. Now, how can that be? From observation. What the problem with living a life focused on pleasure is what? Pleasure is short-lived. There's a fundamental problem with it. You know, so if we're living that way, we'll always be gaining and losing, always having to do more. The mind will never be settled. The mind of desire is a mind that is never settled. It's always wanting and needing. If it gets what it wants, it's temporarily happy. If it doesn't get what it wants, it's unhappy, it's frustrated, it's disappointed. So, you know, so this is another truth. You know, fundamentals. Right? But somehow in our encounter with Dharma, we say we get it, but we really don't get it. Because if we really got it, we would get it. And our life would be much easier. Our minds would be much more at ease. We'd be able to navigate this life with greater openness and you know, calmness, right? Now here's another big, big one. A truth of Buddhism, which everybody who's been around a while has heard, if they've heard all the others. Non-self, anatta. I mean, Americans, and probably many other people in the world, but I'll just speak for our own culture, the culture I know, we grow up with the center of the universe is who? Is me. And of course there's a me, of course there's a Fred, of course, right? And everybody's got the same thing. And my whole life is a narrative of Fred. What he did, what he didn't do, what he does, you know. And then you have this fundamental teaching of the Buddha based on his perception of reality that there's no such solid existing thing as a self, right? And people go over and over again, wow. What are you talking about? Right? Anybody get it? You know, it's like, what are you talking about? But, you know, it's so simple. It's so observable. Everybody right now, close your eyes and look inside your body and mind for a little you, for a self. Whatever your name is, look inside and find him and her right now. This self-existing thing that has been there with you since birth, right up to the present. Can you find it? I mean, it's fascinating. Again, you know, we spend a lot of time meditating on this, but I'm just saying it's so observable. We can look in our mind, we can find thoughts and feelings and memories, we can find all kinds of things, but the person who's supposedly they're all happening to, you know, it's like we can find thoughts, but we'll never find a thinker. We can hear sounds, but we'll never find the hearer. We can walk and know we're walking, but we'll never find that entity that's walking. You'll say, well, my body is walking. Yeah, but if you take your body apart, you'll just find parts. You won't find anything called the body. And yeah, this is a deep thing, but I guess what I'm saying is these are very fundamental. It's sort of like, what's it like? I guess if you're a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim, right? You would believe in God. I mean, isn't that like a fundamental truth of those religions? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of simple, right? I mean, you would just believe in God. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would be, yeah, I'd accept that. So Buddhism doesn't have those kinds of truths, but it has other truths, such as impermanence. Everything is cause, you know, causes and conditions, such as, you know, the fundamental unsatisfactoriness of living a life based on pleasure and desire and non-self. These are fundamental truths. And I talk to people in our community and other all the time who have, you know, call themselves Buddhists, take refuge in Buddhism, they live their life by it. And yet still, it's like we're still negotiating those. You know? I mean, I'll give you another very interesting one. You may find this hard to believe, but you know that like in certain sectors, let's say of Christianity, well, it's also actually in all religions these days. But let me just say Christianity, but that's most in the public eye. There are certain people that believe if you're a good Christian, you are a right-wing conservative Republican. Is that true? They would say, well, of course you are, right? If you're a good Christian, this of course would be your political belief. I mean, does everybody understand what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not saying all Christians, but I'm saying there's certain sectors of Christianity that believe that if you're a good Christian, you would be this and this and this. You know that in current American Buddhism, there are American Buddhists who believe that if you're a good Buddhist, you are what? A left-wing progressive Democrat. With the same strong belief as the conservative right-wing Christian. It's like, well, of course. And yet what? So therefore, when they hear the Buddhist teachings, they take everything into as supporting their what? Their belief system. And anything that doesn't support their belief system, they leave over here. Same way over there. Right? I mean, our noble governor, right? You know, with what he did with those immigrants, you know, I mean, now again, you can have all kinds of political views on immigration and, you know what I mean? I mean, everyone has a right. We're in a democracy. Everybody has a right to their views. But I look at that, I go, because I know he talks very much like he's a very devout Christian. Am I right? I mean, he's right. I'm thinking, am I my brother's keeper? I mean, isn't it like a fundamental? Love thy neighbor as oneself. You know, it's like, these are just human beings. So, you understand what I'm saying? So, and yet we don't see these things. Why? Because the way our minds work, and I'm talking not about our true mind, but our kind of thought-constructed mind, is we have all these mental constructs that we've constructed in our mind about what's right, what's not wrong, who's in, who's out, and they act as filters, right? Which means they what? What's a filter? A filter allows things in and filters out other things, right? That's the idea of a filter. And many of us don't realize in our encounter, and I'll just talk about Dharma, we encounter Dharma without knowing that we have filters. We're letting in the Dharma that we like, and we're filtering out the Dharma that we don't like, right? There are certain things about Fred's teaching that I like. I let them in. Certain things I really don't like, I filter them out. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Now, when that ties into my Americanism, which is, don't I have a right to do that? I'm an American, right? I should have a flag up here. Now again, I'm coming back, you know, we could talk about these things and I've been very happy to talk with you. But I'm talking about now coming back to where we, why I'm bringing this up. You know, as a student of Dharma, as somebody who wants to learn a spiritual path because I want to heal and transform, or I think I can become a better person, or a better, you know, person in relationships, a better contributor to the world, right? So if that's, if I really want to have a fresh encounter with Dharma, so I can hear what the teachers are saying, what the Buddha really said, what Thich Nhat Hanh really said. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh's the same thing. I mean, people, you know, they take pieces of his teaching to support their views, right? Same way people take pieces of everything. But that's not an openness. And again, please understand, this is not dogma. This is not, you know, drink the Kool-Aid. For those who may be going, he's saying, you know, he's offering us Kool-Aid, just drink it. And the Buddha doesn't say that. Buddha said, first, listen to the teachings. In our case, listen, read purely. Hear what's being taught. That's number one. After we've done that, then reflect. Number two, reflect. Does it make sense? Is it logical? Is it really a truth? Like Fred was just talking about truths. You might go home and go, what's he talking about, truths? You know, let me check it out through my own experience, you see? So, you know, the Buddha said, actually, don't take it because I'm the Buddha. You know, run it through your own mind, your own experience, your own logic. Okay? So this is very important. You know, I'm not saying skip that. But the trouble is we're doing two when we should be doing one. You see, we haven't done one yet purely. We haven't read and get, you know, what's the teacher saying? Purely, can I hear those words? What's he saying to me? See, but already, even as it's being spoken or read, we are filtering and we don't even know it, you see. So that's why many people, no matter where they go, all they get is confirmation of, isn't that interesting? You know, I'm over here, I lived my life all these years, I totally different religious tradition, spiritual tradition, blah, blah, blah. I entered Buddhism, it totally agrees with me. This is great. But does it really agree with everything you're doing in life? So this is very subtle, you know, this dirty bowl. I mean, traditionally it meant, you know, we're mixing up our spiritual life with greed and anger and all the kind of emotional afflictions. I think we hopefully are better on that, you know. But it's this very subtle kind of dirt, which is the dirt of all our own conceptions and our ideas that we're not intentioning, and that we're filtering, and many of them we're not even aware of. Yeah, and then beside the three bowls, there are six stains. Okay, I'll just go through them. First stain, and this is, you know, these teachings are thousands of years old, so don't feel like somehow, you know, we're special. I mean, obviously, you know, all these things were known, you know, long term. Okay. The first one is arrogance, pride. Quite simply, it means what? I know more than the teacher. I know more than the teacher. I mean, why go to a teacher if you think you know more than them? Right? I mean, I've always gone to my teachers wanting to learn from them. If I think I know as much as them, or if I know more than them, is that just my own arrogance and pride? Interesting. So that's again considered a stain in the relationship between a student and a teacher. If any of you have ever been in an educational system, you know, especially when you were teenagers or something, I know more than my teacher. Anybody remember that one? Right? Or, you know, you go to college, I know more than my, you know. As a student, then, you're not really going to be much of a learner, are you? Because you think you know more. Now, again, don't take the course. But if we're in a learning situation, we should have some humility. Yeah, let me see what I can learn from this person. Not trusting your teacher, you know, trust. Always doubting, always mistrusting, you know. Again, I mean, that could be your stuff that you project out in the world, but all this is saying is it gets in the way, right, of the student. You see, these are not problems for the teacher. Is that clear? These are things that are given to help the students. And most teachers were students before they became teachers. So please understand, this is meant to help us so we can check our mind. Is that true? So, you know, I really don't have confidence in the teacher. I really don't trust, you know, their understanding. They have my own good. You know, they really want what's best for me. You know, a lot of us, we just don't trust. Again, that contaminates the relationship. You know, it just prevents us from speedily moving along when there's that kind of issue. Of course, the other big one is, you know, the stain is, you know, lack of diligence. We just don't apply ourselves. You know, we're kind of lazy. We're intermittent. We get distracted by external events. How did they know? You know, we get distracted. The other one is interesting. It says, you know, we're kind of too tight inside, kind of like there's an inner tension. We're not relaxed and open. And then the last one is discouragement. So these are stains in the relationship. Again, these, you know, three defects in the bowl, six stains are meant to help the student, to check our minds, to go. Because again, I think you know, from the point of view of the path, from the point of view of the teachers, the masters, who are showing us the way of how to practice the path, why do they do it? I mean, do they do it for money? I mean, we know in many areas of our life, right? You know, people do things, even supposedly good things, for money, right? Do they do it for fame? Right? Do they do it for other kinds of egoistic needs? Is that why they're doing it? You know, my experience with my teachers, they do it because they love the Dharma. It's made a vast, significant, vast change in their own lives and minds. They see people who are suffering in their life. And they want to help because they think the Dharma is of help, can be of help to them, right? So my experience with my teachers is basically their motivation is pure. And I've always been very grateful for teachers. Okay. So, but we have to be careful that we don't project. Everybody know about projection? Fundamental psychological kind of thing that egos do. We love to project our stuff unto them. So people, you know, who have a lot of mistrust, you know, you know how it is. They'll see it all outside themselves. I mean, there's nothing illegal about that, is there? No. But again, this is taught from the point of view of the harm it does to the student making progress and moving speedily along the path. Right? I mean, if we're going for a hike in the woods, right? It's nice to walk a path that's clear. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, if you walk a path that's totally overgrown and there are roots everywhere and there are branches, you know, and you're having to chop your way through, you know, it's going to take a long time. It won't be a speedy path. But if we really want to get somewhere, we'd like to take a route, you know, that's clear. So what these three bowls and six stains are trying to help us do is clear our stuff out. You see, we're always focused on cleaning everybody else's stuff out. Right? We're not used to cleaning our own stuff out. This is again, it's only for those who understand that, you know, and want to make progress. If you want to learn the piano, what do? You go to a piano teacher. If you want to learn how to play, you want them to teach you. You want to think they know more than you and they can help you. And this is another thing. It's not in here, but I'll just say it anyhow. We don't like to be corrected, right? We don't like to be held accountable, right? I was saying to somebody the other day who's a musician, I said, you know, it's like, you know, we want to go to the music teacher, but don't point out my wrong notes. Mm-mm-mm. I just want to hear, attaboy, good job, Fred. You see? Or you can point out my mistakes, but only when I ask you. You see? Don't on your own point them out to me. I only want feedback when I mean, can you see if you really wanted to learn to play the piano or whatever it is, how that would be such a sabotage for yourself? If I want to learn to play, yeah, tell me when I'm off. Tell me when I'm hitting wrong notes. Please, I can't see it. I don't know this thing. But, you know, when it comes to our own personhood, our own stuff, we are very what? Defensive. My stuff. Anyhow, we have a little time. I'm very interested in questions for me. Brian's on the, so Brian will take people just chat in your question, and people in the hall can just raise their hands. We have a mic. So please reflect if you, anything that doesn't make sense to you, you know, that you challenge, or that's fine, or just how to apply this. So those online, just chat in your question. Brian will relay them, and those in the hall, just raise your hands. And don't be shy. Some non-shy people in the back. So I want to go to Brian, then Kim, okay? And then I'll come to you, Brian, upstairs.
Hello, is this working?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, lazy, discouraged, arrogant person sitting here. Wondering, does anybody come to the Dharma with a clean bowl? Like, how would that be possible? And like, what, like, I'm listening to what you're saying, I'm trying to understand it, but like, what would be the first thing you would recommend to clean out that bowl?
Okay. So if you ask me, does anybody come with a perfectly clean bowl? Not that I'm aware of, but, you know, there probably are some people, right? to what, you know, but I think it's degrees, you know, so some people have, you know, 50 holes in their bowl, and some people maybe have 3 holes in their bowl. I mean, it's still leaking, you know what I'm saying? And some people have a very dirty bowl, and some people have a somewhat dirty bowl. Okay, so, I mean, is that clear? I mean, these teachings are there, and they've been there for thousands of years because, you know, this is an issue, and they're trying to help students. Okay, so first thing is, you hear these teachings, right? Which are meant to help you reflect. And you begin to ask yourself, you know, is my bowl upright, right? Am I coming to the Dharma? Am I listening to the teachings with an open mind? I'm just breathing it in. You see what I'm saying? That's the first question. You know, am I really paying attention? Am I giving it my full attention? Okay. Two. You might work on that one, but then you may find that, well, it's a leaky bowl. And then you reflect, well, how can I begin to fill in some of these cracks, fill in some of these leaks, right? So it doesn't keep slipping away, right? And then, you know, the stains, I mean, discouragement, right? A stain. Now, why do we get discouraged? Question. We get discouraged, why?
Why do I get discouraged, or why do we get discouraged?
Yeah.
Okay, so like maybe my bowl has holes in it, but like I get the teachings, mm-hmm. I practice,
good,
and things still arise.
Yep.
They keep arising,
yep.
And I'm doing everything that I've been instructed to do, and I just, okay, I'm not getting the results that I want. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that's good. So again, if you ask me how I would do that, you know, and I've been at this for 50 years, and you know, I'm a practitioner. I check myself. Okay, am I really doing? You know, like even to say I'm doing, you know, as much as I can. Is that really true? Am I really watching my mind all day? Am I really delineating wholesome from unwholesome and very, you know, careful to kind of cultivate the wholesome and not cultivate the unwholesome? You know what I'm saying? So I would just check my mind and see. It doesn't mean that I'm not practicing, but in other words, could I be more in my application? You know, and I always find I could always do more because I'm not a Buddha. I'm not perfect. Right. So I am walking the path of imperfection, okay? Living with my imperfections and doing my best, you know, to always, you know, just check, you know, and can always do better. And that doing better is not, you know, not, I mean, a lot of us, it's like a guilt thing or a feeling bad thing. It's not like that at all. It's a very positive thing. It's like, yeah. You know, playing the piano, you know, it's like, that wasn't really good. I better practice this a little more. I mean, there's no ego involved in it. It's just an acknowledgement. I think discouragement comes when we have a self that thinks she should be doing better than she should. She should be further along the way than she is, you see? But that's the self always kind of weighing things and assessing us in this way. You know, again, it's hard for us who come out of this kind of background to be aware, oh, I can just objectively, you know, like I can, you know, have you ever played an instrument? Okay, I mean, like I can objectively listen, and when I hit a wrong note, I can just know that it's a wrong note and just correct it. I don't get down on myself. I shouldn't be hitting wrong notes at this stage. You know, I'm hitting them. You see what I'm saying? So I think there's a way that we can be with ourselves, right? Where we are kind of moving ourselves along the path, you see, that's not discouraging. Yeah, it's like, yeah, a lot of this stuff still keeps coming up. All right, let me check. I mean, I've talked to a number of people in this past week. It's interesting. Stuff keeps coming up. Well, in looking with them, it's like, well, maybe the source of this is a little deeper than we've been working with it. You know, maybe the, you know, the formation is still deep down there, you see, and there's a little more introspection, healing that has to be done. Right? Why does it keep coming back? You know what I mean? So, but again, it's an objective kind of investigation of my own mind. Okay? Brian? And then, all right, well, did you have, are there some upstairs? Okay, let me take the one upstairs and then come back to you, Brian. Just to be fair.
So Mark says, there are bad piano teachers.
There what?
There are bad piano teachers.
Yes.
How do we balance arrogance / not trusting versus blind faith?
Well, let's get rid of all three of them. The Buddha said, you know, don't take what I said on blind faith. You know, the Buddha is very interesting, or Buddhism is very interesting. So there are teachings, because there are sutras, you know, in which, guess what? The Buddha shows up somewhere, somewhere in India, and the people said to him, you know, like, you're the fourth teacher that's shown up here this month. I'm just paraphrasing, but you know, like, and they said, you know, how do you know, you know that a teacher is a good teacher, right? So you know what the Buddha said? Live with them. That was the first thing. Live with them. You know, like, live with them. Then you really see behind the mask, you know, live with them. Okay? Then the Buddha said, well, if you can't live with them, talk to somebody who's lived with them. See what they say. Okay? If you can't live with them and you can't talk to somebody who's lived with them, observe them over time. See if they are what they say they are. Okay? If you can't do that, talk to somebody who's observed them over time and see what they say. So those three stains don't have to take place. I mean, this is the Buddha's teachings. Yeah, so, you know, these days, anybody can hold themselves up as a teacher, right? So you check them out. I mean, you know, when people come to our community and I get to meet them and they say, well, I'm just checking you out. I say, good, yeah, check us out. I like that. You know, talk to people in the community, come regularly, listen to the talks. Yeah, I think that's smart. You know, there's a lot of impostures these days, or a lot of people who have big egos behind what they're doing. How do you know? You know, a lot of good actors. How do you know? Well, you know, you'll know. Okay? So, you know, we don't check our intelligence at the door. This is not a cult. Yes, Brian.
So my question is not about the broader topic. It's more specifically about non-self.
Uh-huh.
Because I've been listening to this for years and keep thinking of how to ask my question.
Yeah, good.
And it's never really, I've never perfected it, but how to ask. But I keep coming back to this because it's, on one hand, it's very obvious that everything is made up of parts. We learn that, you know, as we grow up. And with an object, it's easy, you know, like a car is made up of car parts. And so we know that. And it gets more difficult, obviously, with a person or an animal, something like that, because, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's just more difficult to grasp. But it also, it serves a practical purpose to know that it's made up of parts, because I know that a car is made up of parts, so I can replace parts. I can, you know, if the car has crashed, you can sell the parts that remain that are still in good condition. Yeah, yeah. There are practical purposes to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's also, my mind keeps going back to the idea of, like, what is the alternative? What can I relate to? If there's not a self, then there's, or an independent self, then what is there? You know, is like, if you were to say we're all part of a dream, like, you know, the comparisons that in Buddhism mm-hmm. of the dream and that mm-hmm. kind of thing, mm-hmm. and to say that, then it's like, okay, so are we all one consciousness and that sort of thing? But it's just, I keep coming back to, what is the practical purpose of it? Like, what is the usefulness of the non-self?
Of the non-self, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a great question. Great question. We could do a Dharma talk on it. Yeah. So before we get to non-self, let's go back to the Buddha. Suffering, human suffering. And he looked into what's the cause of human suffering. And so what he found was, what he postulated was, the cause of human suffering is people identify themselves as a solid, permanent entity, me, right? So therefore, one lives a life always from the point of view of me. What's in it for me? How do I get my desires met, my needs met? You know, it's people lead a self-centered life, which causes suffering to themselves and others, right? You see, so he first saw that the self, and it separates people. I'm over here, you're over there. You know, what do I have to do with these people? I'm me, they're them. So he felt this whole duality, separation, belief in a separate self was at the fundamental cause of human suffering, okay? So that's why your good question is, well, you know, why do you even have to get into this part of it? I mean, you don't, you can still be a good person without it, right? But this is the fundamental issue we're always struggling with, right? Protecting myself. I mean, who gets hurt? I get hurt. See, me, I get hurt. Okay. So this is very interesting. Buddhism does not say there's no such experience as self. It says, please listen very carefully, we all know there is a subjective sense of me. Everybody know what that is? We have a subjective sense that this whole thing, whatever it is me, right? Okay, does everybody know what I'm talking about? We have, so the Buddha says, yes, in this relative world of bodies and minds, we have a subjective sense that it's me. And it's very, it's kind of the, you know, the way we operate in the world, right? I mean, I know, you know, this is Fred and there's Max, you see? And, you know, Max has got his stuff and I got my stuff, okay? So, I mean, it's because subjectively that's Max, and subjectively that's Fred, okay? And everybody has their own subjectivity, right? What the Buddha said, because of the, when we identify myself as a permanent solid thing over time, like a thing, that's where I get into trouble. Okay. And so the Buddha said, not theoretically, but from meditative investigation, right? When he looked and looked and looked throughout his body, mind, he could not find anything called a self. No permanent self-existing thing. He found, just like you said, he found parts. If you went through your whole body, you would find parts, but you wouldn't find one part called a body, right? Right? If you took all Brian's parts, you'd find lots of parts, right? I don't know. Thousands of parts, millions of parts, you know, so I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But you wouldn't find any part called body. Body is the name we give to when all these parts are put together and, you know, bagged in a skin bag, right? I mean, that's that's, we call that a body, right? Right. So, but Brian calls it his body, right? Because there's a subjective sense. This, of course, this is my body. I'm the one who feeds it, take care of it. So then, if we can't find a Brian in the body, then Brian must be in his mind, right? So then Brian looks into his mind. What does he find? Endless arising and passing of thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories. None of it has any solidity. None of it has any permanence, right? But we believe what? Well, if I have thoughts, there must be an entity called the thinker. Is that true? I mean, it's obvious. Find the thinker. Just look into your own mind when you meditate next time. Find the thinker, that entity that is producing your thoughts. I mean, this is a mystery, my friends. There are thoughts, but there's no thinker. We walk, but we can't find that entity who's walking. It's just walking. I mean, I could go on and on, but that, again, that is something that we can all experience. Do you see the significance of it? Because all our suffering, our loneliness, our separation, our neediness, all comes from a self that wants to what? That believes it can only be happy by getting its needs met. The truth is, if there's no self endlessly telling us we need things and must have things, or you know, endlessly advancing and defending, we'd be happy with things just as they are. I mean, why do people love Thich Nhat Hanh? What's his message? Happiness is available here and now. What? I thought happiness is available after I work for 40 years and pay off my mortgage and have a nice big retirement fund. Isn't that when happiness begins? Happiness when I find the right partner. Happiness when I find the right place to live. That's the way. But happiness is available here and now. I can have a peaceful mind here and now. Yeah, if you didn't have a self always agitating you. I mean, just listen to that voice. Everybody know what the voice I'm talking about? Everybody has their own little voice. It's always telling you what? It's always barking its commands. Do this, don't do this, get upset, get angry, be happy. You need this, you can't have that. What if there was no voice there? Or if there was a voice, you knew it was just a disembodied voice. And you were just present and aware, enjoying just being alive, wherever you are. So that's why self is a big issue. Is that helpful? Well, we can continue.
Yeah, I'm going to have to keep searching.
But this is big. I mean, this is, we have a wisdom path here, we have our three paths. I mean, the wisdom path is all about exploring the nature of mind, the nature of self. I mean, this is, because this is very different than, there's lots in Buddhism that are in other good religions and spiritual paths, but this is very significant. This is one of the great insights of the Buddha. And again, so it's important. He does not deny, we do not deny that there's a subjective sense of meanness. It's only upon investigation that we see that nothing solid, right? Just like the rainbow, right? With the example of the rainbow. You see the rainbow? I saw a rainbow the other day, right? It looks like a thing, doesn't it? Oh, look, there's the rainbow. Anybody ever try to find the rainbow? How'd you do? The closer you get, you get in your car, yeah, I'm going to go get that. And what happens? It dissolves. It's it's just an illusion. You see, it's an illusion, but yet it appears. Right? Self is like that. It appears, but, you try to grab it, you can't find it. So you let go. Oh, wow. What was I getting so bent out of shape about? Well, thank you, everyone. We've had fun this morning. Thank you.